far away from his son as possible. Kinnison opened a canvas satchel and started to toss cylindrical grands through the open doorway of the cottage. Gunning the engine to life, the doctor drove away from the cottage and passed the fence just as there was a brilliant flash of light and the first of the white phosphorus charges ignited. Chem flame shot out the door and windows, and soon the entire clearing was a roaring inferno, flames licking into the sky for 100 feet. Kinnison watched the destruction with some degree of satisfaction. Willie Peter didn't burn as hot as thermite, but it made much less smoke. Let people think what they wanted, but nobody would know the source of the child but himself and the healer. And when Glassman was aced by his hand, Kinnison would order one of the steam-powered PT boats to find and destroy the runaway slaves in the stolen ship. Setting the man's family free, and letting them stay free, were two entirely different matters. As they drove over the plains of grass, the jungle rapidly approaching, a sea breeze carried the smell of the burning cottage to the Hummer, and the child began to cry. Every jounce of the wag bringing pain to his sores, Kinnison bristled at the noise.
We'll never smuggle them into the fortress this way. Silence the thing.
Slowing carefully, Glassman offered the newborn a clean rag dipped in coconut milk, and it started sucking happily, kicking tiny legs.
All hail Corbett Kinnison, heir to the Iron Throne of the Thousand Islands, Admiral of the Fleet, General of the Army, Master of the Black Powder...
Not yet.
Kinnison glanced across the island to the imposing fortress on top of the main mountain of his island build.
But very soon.
Avoiding the farms with their slaves and overseers, Glassman drove the Hummer through an arid stretch of land yet to be reclaimed from the last acid rainfall until reaching a rough culvert, actually a cooled river of lava from the island's active volcano. Here the Baron painfully stepped from the wag and watched it drive off before starting his long journey toward the fortress on the hill. Walking was difficult for the overweight man, and he was drenched in sweat by the time he reached the end of the culvert and emerged onto a great grassy plain. Pausing on a low hill to catch his breath, the Baron looked out upon the world he ruled. Tendrils of dark smoke rose from the mines, which delivered the basic ingredients for black powder, and a good mile away were the mills that mixed and rolled the explosive into usable form. More farms spread into the jungle hills, tiny plows pulled by slaves harvesting the grain and fruit for his table. Nearby stood the slave pens and the execution yard. Keep the dead in sight, and the living will obey, his father had always said, and he had been correct. Scattered among the hills and forest were the blockhouses filled with firebirds, the real source of his power. Most of the fools believed he ruled the Thousand Islands by controlling the secret of how to make the black powder. It wasn't true. The unstoppable missiles could blow the gate off any ville and sink the largest ship in minutes. None dared to stand against him as long as the firebirds were his to command. Once a rogue Sekhmen had turned one of the rockets on the young Baron, and the would-be killer couldn't believe the sight when the weapon curved away from the Baron in mid-flight and headed straight for the traitor, exploding his body into bloody smoke. Black powder brought Kinnison's Sekhmen, beautiful women to bed, and lots of slaves, but his word was obeyed because of the firebirds. If that secret ever fell from his hands, then nothing could save the man from a terrible retribution. A stone castle stood on a distant mountaintop, its imposing array of firebirds undetectable in the manicured gardens and trimmed hedges. Armed Sekhmen patrolled the grounds day and night. A monumental flight of stairs, carved from the living rock of the mountainside, led down to the walled ville on the beach, where his people lived in constant fear of his wrath. In the water were countless fishing canoes trawling the rich waters, and several large sailing ships called windjammers that used sails instead of steam engines. Prizes won in battle with the renegades to the south, they now served both as items to be sold to villes that needed to increase their fleets and as physical protection for the vulnerable dockyards. On the beach were the great docks that housed his fleet of PT boats, salvaged from a pre-dark museum and repaired over many long years. Armed with firebirds, those vessels were his iron fist to rob the weak villes, threaten the strong ones, and beat back the growing menace of the pirates. Feeling better, Kinnison started forward once more, mopping his face with a clean handkerchief. As he neared the estate, a bell began to ring, and suddenly Sekhmen came running from every direction with drawn blasters. Baron Kinnison stopped and watched as the guards spread out in a protective circle around him.
Sir, you were walking the grounds alone? Is that wise, my lord?
Should I fear an attack on my own island?
The man blanched.
No, my lord. Of course not. I mean, that is...
Shut up, ass.
Kinnison brushed past the guard. Competent Sekhmen were so difficult to find. They either obeyed every command blindly and without thought, or else tried to ace the Baron and take over. Nobody could be trusted, and traitors abounded. Trying to pretend he enjoyed arduous walking, the Baron gave no sign of his fatigue as he crossed a decorative bridge arching over a burbling moat of clear mountain water. Tall hedges blocked a clear view of the mansion now, making it doubly hard for snipers to find a target. As Kinnison maneuvered through the maze, the gardeners and passing slave girls dropped to their knees in homage. Exiting the hedges, he encountered a group of visiting barons talking with one another, discussing some nonsense. Probably had to cheat him on the price of the next shipment of black powder. Bastards. As required, the visitors touched their chests and bowed their heads as a sign of respect. Lord Baron Kinnison sneered. Respect his ass. They feared his firebirds, nothing more. Past a splashing fountain, he turned and headed for the side door of the massive structure. The mansion used to be some sort of government building, but the thick walls and lack of windows made it a perfect fortress. Every door was fronted by a low sandbag with armed Sekhmen behind, and more guards walked the rooftop, equipped with bamboo tubes packed with black powder and sharp pieces of coral. The grisly results of detonating these bombs near living flesh were most interesting to see from a great distance. A young Sekhmen snapped a salute.
Morning, Lord Baron!
An older Sekhmen snarled and cupped the other to the ground.
Idiot! Never salute with your gun hand. Do it again and I'll see you in chains.
Kinnison nodded at the exchange. At least some of his guards knew their job. Before entering the fortress, the Baron glanced down the great stairs and out in the harbor. The view was magnificent, the rising sun filling the sea with crimson fire. Then the Baron noticed a lone PT boat steaming into the dockyard. Badly battered, the craft was riddled with holes, white smoke spurting from damage to its aft steam engine, and it was listing badly, as if taking on water. For a brief moment, Kinnison thought the craft was Lieutenant Craig Brandon's ship, PT-264, but that was impossible. Baron Kinnison had sent his chief Sekhmen off with 10 of the stout fighting craft, armed to the gunnels with firebirds to handle the problem of getting more flash from Cold Harborville. It was unthinkable that only a single vessel would return from such a simple task. Nothing less than a full fleet of pirate vessels could even challenge such an armada. He turned for the door and went inside. Just a trick of the light reflected off the dancing waters of the ocean. Nothing more. But as he waddled along the cool corridor of the pre-dark post office, the Lord Baron felt an unfamiliar shiver run down his spine. Odd. It almost felt like fear. After a huge breakfast, Kinnison went to the throne room to listen to petitioners from the lesser islands try to bargain for more black powder at lower prices. He really should have been walking through the mills, making sure the overseers were storing the powder properly. The last accident removed a chunk of the hillside larger than most vills. But the Lord Baron wanted the lesser barons to be present when he received the good news, not grubby techs and Sekhmen. The room was packed with visiting barons from other island vills and their attendants. Nobody was armed, not even with eating knives. Only his Sekhmen standing guard in the corners were allowed to carry weapons in the presence of the Lord Baron. The huge room was lit by smoky torches, even though it was morning, as there were no windows for an assassin to shoot through. The doors were double thick and banded with iron, and the walls of the throne room were covered with carpeting stolen from the ruins of a skyscraper on Forbidden Island. It cut down on the echoes of raised voices, which often hurt his ears these days. A raised wooden platform supported his specially built throne, with blasters hidden in both armrests, and steel plating under the seat was protection against bombs. Female servants stood attendant on either side, holding trays of wine and small fried birds. More servants walked through the crowd, offering brass mugs of tree bark tea or warm coconut milk to the dignitaries. All accepted, but few drank. Hours passed as barons and sons of barons placed their cases before Kinnison. To some he said yes, to most it was no. It all depended on whether they looked him in the face when they spoke. Those that did were dangerous and got nothing. But the ones who averted their eyes out of fear